I want to thank you to the choir for the summer sing and providing us that beautiful music to lead us in worship. Good morning, everybody. It's great to be back here again. Our lesson today that comes to us from the gospel, I'm going to expand just a little bit on it. It comes to us from the gospel according to Mark chapter 6, beginning at verse 30. And I'm also going to be reading that little section of Jesus walks on the water. It's just a few verses. So with your ears, you can follow along for what's printed in the bulletin and then listen up here for that little section of this miracle that happens. There's this balance between a whole lot of chaos and activity and trouble and withdrawing and finding the blessing and peace of God. And here's the lesson for this morning, beginning at verse 30. The apostles gathered around Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. He said to them, "Come away to a deserted place all by yourselves and rest a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a deserted place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they hurried there on foot from all the towns and arrived there ahead of them. As he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. Skipping down to verse 45. Immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side, to Bethesda, while he dismissed the crowd. After saying farewell to them, he went up on the mountain to pray. When evening came, the boat was out on the sea, and he was alone on the land. When he saw that they were straining at the oars against an adverse wind, he came towards them early in the morning, walking on the sea. He intended to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were terrified. But immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Then he got into the boat with them, and the wind ceased, and they were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. When they had crossed over, they came to land at Gennesaret and moored the boat. When they got out of the boat, people at once recognized him and rushed about that whole region and began to bring the sick on mats to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he went, into villages or cities or farms, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and begged him that they might touch even the fringe of his cloak, and all who touched it were healed. Here ends the reading of God's holy word. May God bless it to our understanding. I spend my weekdays over at the clinic as a therapist, and a lot of what I do there is I'm simply a holding place. I'm a person who offers, hopefully, a loving presence, and I listen to a lot of stories, a lot of memories of people. And many times, people will be talking to me and they'll say, "You know, I don't really know why I'm remembering this right now." And we work together and think about what it is that might have triggered that memory, what maybe came up in them. Sometimes it's simply a matter of hearing a word, or smelling something that reminds you of your childhood, or weather. Weather is something that often will remind us, even when we're not aware of an anniversary coming up, when the weather changes and the air smells a certain way, we may feel exactly like we did when we were 14 years old or 27 years old, and it takes us back in time. Bessel van der Kolk, who is a trauma therapist, says that the body keeps the score. Even if our mind isn't remembering, our body will remember trauma, but also good things that have happened. So it's not surprising to me that when I come to this season of the year, especially this particular week in July, that I find myself remembering the summer that my mom died. She was 84 years old at the time. and it was for me a surreal time leading up to her death. I was working in Cambria at the time as the pastor, and my kids were all under the age of 9. I've got 4 kids. They were in their odd years. And my marriage at the time was crumbling. I took the kids with me, and we headed up north to Brainerd, Minnesota to see Mom. We went a little bit early to get away from the conflict at home. And after we'd been there for several days, Mom had an episode on Wednesday morning, and we decided that we needed to take her into the hospital. It turned out that she had had a heart attack, and it was the start of several very difficult days. She was transferred down to a hospital in Minneapolis, and a few days after that, she was scheduled for a triple bypass. I can't adequately describe how shaky and afraid that I felt during those hours and days. I reassured Mom on Monday morning when she went into surgery that no matter what happened, everything would be okay. And I believed that with all of my heart. I didn't know if she'd survive the surgery, but I knew she was a woman of faith, and I knew that for her, she was facing that surgery really without a lot of fear because she was so ready. But I wasn't so sure that things would be okay for me and my children. And yet, from the moment that we first entered that ER in Brainerd and we saw that the nurse on duty was my cousin, Mary. Mary, who I hadn't seen in years and who my little kids had never even met. I knew that there was something different and that maybe I wasn't as alone. On the evening after Mom came out of surgery, she was in intensive care and she hadn't awoken from the surgery. We knew that she might not wake up. She was so critically ill. And I stayed alone in the family surgery waiting room, and some of you have been in a waiting room like that. I kept vigil throughout the night. My sister had gone back to Brainerd. She needed to for the night. She was going to come back in the morning. We promised that we would take shifts, and so I found myself there on that uncomfortable couch in the visitor's lounge, completely and utterly alone. Other families had come and gone, and every 30 minutes or so, I'd wander back into Mom's room, and I'd talk to the nurses to see if there had been any changes, and no, there hadn't. I remember how quiet things were in that hospital in the middle of the night. I missed my kids so much. I'd never been away from them for that long. They were staying with a friend up in Brainerd. I had all of these thoughts and fears swirling around in my head about how I was going to get back to Wisconsin, about whether I'd be able to continue to be a pastor in the church, and how I would manage being a single parent, because I knew what was coming. I tried to focus my prayers on recovery for my mom, but all I could think of was how scared I was. And as I sat there with my thoughts in this chaos, I looked up, and there was a man passing by the waiting room. And something in my heart leapt because I knew him. I called out, "Steve?" And he stopped in his tracks, and he turned and he looked, and he said, "Julie?" Steve Rosenau was there, my mom's next-door neighbor. 2.5 hours from his home, down there to see one of his family members. Had no idea that my mom, one of his dear friends, had been admitted to the hospital and had gone through that surgery. Had no idea that I was there. And at 1 o'clock in the morning, there we were. He was an angel in disguise. I swear he had wings underneath his jacket. A coincidence. A fluke? Or was it a miracle? All I know was that I felt a warmth spread throughout my chest and goosebumps on the back of my neck. I had felt so completely, utterly alone, and here was a dear old friend in this wilderness with me, appearing as if out of nowhere. She died the next morning, and it seemed for me that that summer converged into a perfect storm. I still felt like I was way over my head, like my kids, who I used to call a pod of dolphins, they were so close in age, that we were somehow in a boat cast adrift. That night in the waiting room, I almost gave up. And then Jesus came. Steve came. But it felt like Jesus came. In the form of this man, this neighbor, this friend, who offered a shoulder to cry on and a warm embrace and hope that life would go on no matter what. It was as if I could hear the words in my own heart, "Oh, sweetheart, it's going to be okay." I was still a long way from shore, but I wasn't alone anymore. Isn't this how life works? Jesus sends the disciples out ahead of him after their long day with crowds of people. They climb into the boat and they launch out into the sea, and at first things are going fine. They're finally going to get a chance to rest on the other side, and maybe the lake will be placid and calm. But like that tragedy that happened in Branson that's so fresh in our hearts, where so many lost their lives, a squall came up. Not long ago, I was on the ferry in Lake Superior on the way from the UP over to Isle Royal, and it was placid, that lake, on the way over, but on the way back, it was so rough. All of us felt ill. When you're on a ship like that, you have to trust in the captain, and if you can't find your captain, who do you trust in? The waves were crashing into the boat where those disciples were staying, and even the saltiest of them felt seasick. The darker the night becomes, the more the winds began to rage, and they are in over their heads, quite literally, as the waves crash around them. The last time a storm like this came up, at least Jesus was in the boat with them. You remember that story, how he calmed the sea around them, but this time they were alone, just with themselves in that storm. They didn't even know quite where he was or if he knew their predicament. Their love was new. Their discipleship was so fresh. They'd seen some of the miracles, but they didn't know that they were going to experience one. And then he came. Let that thought sink in for a moment. Into the chaos, Jesus came. Walter Brueggemann reminds us that God's not afraid of chaos. God's kind of curious about chaos. It intrigues God. And so it was with Jesus. Although he was resting on the shore, safe where he was, he saw the storm, he knew that they were out there, and he walked out there. Time and time again, we find stories of the way that God works through Jesus' ministry. Remember the lepers gathered there on the side of the road, cast out by their families, abandoned by their friends, alone they struggled with their pain and how they had been shunned. And then Jesus came. The blind man staggering down the road, cup in a hand, begging for a morsel to sustain his life. He didn't even see him coming because he couldn't. But Jesus came. The demoniac, mind tortured with mental illness, raging out of control, Jesus came to him. The woman caught in adultery, cringing on the ground, covering her heads at those who had already picked up the stones, and Jesus came to her. Do you hear the power in that? Do you feel it? I felt it that night in the hospital through Steve. Precisely at that moment, I felt it. It was bigger than both of us. This wasn't just a neighbor and a friend. This was the reassurance of the Holy Spirit saying, "You are not alone." In the midst of this chaos and all the tubes and machines, at the edge of death, you are not alone. I felt it as I stood at the bedside of a young boy who'd been struck by a car at age 10, family members huddled by his side, so much sorrow and fear because they knew he couldn't survive. And into that hospital room, Jesus came, this time in the form of a woman who had the paperwork so that the family could start the organ donation process and others would come to have life even as their little boy passed. It's a story being told in the gospel again and again. He was frightened or sick or dying of AIDS, and Jesus came. She was strung out on alcohol and drugs. Her husband had left her. His pain was so great that the pills were already in his hand, and Jesus came. Just when we think that we are utterly alone and without hope, when the ship that we are floating in is about to capsize, can we have the hope that possibly, even for us, Jesus will come? That night out there on the sea, he knew that they were there. He hadn't lost sight of them or forgotten about them. He wasn't careless or carefree. He went out to them, and though they did not see and understand at first who he was, something happened. He didn't simply offer them his presence in the midst of the fear. He called them to come to him. "Take heart," he says. "I am. I am," using the words that God said in addressing Moses. God has much more in store for us than comforting us when we weather the storms in life. All we can see are the waves crashing in, but God calls us forth, calms the storm, and sends us onward. And man, they were busy when they got off that boat. The crowds were already waiting for them. It was this that Martha Beck slowly began to understand as she prepared for the birth of her second child, Adam. She subtitles her book, "The True Story of Birth, Rebirth, and Everyday Magic." And it was through the magic of birthing her son that her healing began. Adam was born with Down syndrome. And yet from the moment that she conceived him, she knew that there was something different about him. An autoimmune disorder had caused Martha to become violently ill every single time she ate anything. Maybe like the princess, whatever that is when you throw up all the way through your pregnancy, Martha could not keep anything down. There were times that she couldn't even sip water without it coming back up. And there was one weekend that when she was alone with her two-year-old daughter, and she felt what she describes as a death spiral. The more dehydrated she became, the more the nausea increased, and the more weak she became. She was so weak and dizzy, she thought about calling an ambulance, but she dismissed the idea. Her mind drifted to the thought of what was in her kitchen that she could possibly stomach to keep down, that she could drink or eat that could calm the nausea. But even thinking about the food in the refrigerator made her vomit. And then in an almost dreamlike state, she imagined herself with her good imagination being strong enough to go to the food market just down the street. And she imagined herself walking the aisles, and as she pictured the items on the shelves, her eye caught in her mind raspberry juice on the shelf. And down a little further were some rice cakes, and in the cooler was a chunk of cheddar cheese. These things she thought she'd be able to handle. But in her weakness, there was no way she could leave her apartment to get that food. Martha slumped down to the floor. That was how weak she was. And as she did, she heard a loud knock on the door. She couldn't imagine who would be there, and she made her way slowly to that door. She had no real friends in town. It was a college town. Her husband was across the ocean. And she opened the latch, and there stood her friend Sybil. A friend she'd met when she was pregnant with her first child. Sybil had had a baby at the same time, and they'd lost touch, but now, somehow, miraculously, Sybil was standing at the door, and she had with her a sack that maybe had some groceries in it. "I hope I'm not being too forward," she said, "but I remember being pregnant and all the different foods that I craved. I stopped by to pick up some things for you." Martha led her into the kitchen, and as Sybil unloaded the groceries, she got goosebumps. In one hand, Sybil pulled out a bottle of raspberry juice, and in the other, she lifted a pack of rice cakes, and in the bottom of that bag was a chunk of cheddar cheese. Sybil paused in getting this stuff out as she looked at Martha, and Martha had begun to weep, and she said, "Are you okay?" And Martha, who could barely speak, shook her head and said, "No, pregnant again, can't eat." And Sybil drew close to her, and she said, "Well, let's feed you. Oh, sweetheart, it's going to be okay." Martha could not see her way out. She was in this storm of illness and this hopelessness, and she opened up her door and Jesus was there. I mean, Sybil. Because, friends, that's how Christ comes to us. Through the hands and the feet and the hearts and the souls of people that God places in our paths. I read a quote earlier this morning that we don't really need to pray that God would be present. What we need to do is pray that we will have eyes and ears to see, because God is ever present. And there are times in our lives when we feel as if we are in that ship at sea and things are crashing around us and there is no one in the boat with us and nowhere to go for help. And it's precisely at that time that we need to remember, we're invited to remember, that God hasn't abandoned us. This is God's deepest desire, that we open our eyes and see when God is present and extending that hand. When we can move past our own pain and reach out our own hands to accept that help. When we can know that we have not been forgotten. And when we know that once we have been held and healed and touched, God will send us on our way as well. Because we, my friends, are the hands and the feet of Christ. We may be the very ones sent with precisely the word that another person needs to hear, precisely the prayer that needs to be prayed, precisely the hand that needs to be extended. We may be the ones to say to that one who is so lost, "Oh, sweetheart, it's going to be okay." Thanks be to God. Amen.